Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the fourth day of Cheshvan. Today we're going to see Minchat Shlomo Tinyana, which is really volumes 2 and 3 in one volume. Minchat Shlomo Tinyana, Simon Peivav, responsum number 86. To this responsum is a it's a collection like we've seen in other cases of Shlomo Zalman, sometimes in the book. You've got, it's one chapter in the book, but it's a 5, 10, 15 short tshuvot, short responsa that come together, and this is such a responsum, and it's actually a continuation of a responsa that we saw back on the second day of Nisan. So if you go through your memory bank, you look back to the second day of Nisan, you realize this is a continuation of that one. It's completely separate topics because that's the way Moshe put them together. It's from Shlomo Zalman and Auerbach put them together. He just put them together in that way. Let's pause briefly to thank the OU and Rabbi Jacob Rawitz, David Hackhauser, for putting the Shiurim online and making them available to you. And all the ones that we'll see today loosely link around the question of establishing times of death. Because the first question, which is number 5 in the list of questions in this chapter of the book, is the question of transplantation. Can you take a body part out of somebody who's passed away for the benefits of somebody who is ill? Now, this response was written back on the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar of 1968, of Tafshin Chav Chet, 5728. So it wasn't so much about brain death yet, it was just about transplantation from those who have died. Can you transplant body parts? And the other question is, not only is the person dead, but also is it like not a a bizayon, a mistreatment of the person who's passed away to taking body parts out? Shlomo Zalman starts off by saying, I'm not here, and I think it's nice, it's a play on words, I'm not here, kim me'ir, I'm only here, kim me'ir, mem ayin yud resh, which means I'm making some notes, I'm making some comments, v'lo kim me'ir, mem aleph yud resh, not somebody bringing full light to the issue, in which case I would pasken, right? I'm not being a posek here, I am only making some comments, and therefore, if you find other rabbis who tell you other psak, you haven't received a psak from me, a ruling from me, that you have to worry about. The background is not so clear because it's a tshuva. He says, but there's a chasam sofer who spoke about the fact that he thinks, and this is going to be important for our discussion, that he thinks that once breathing has stopped, that breathing is the sign of cessation of life, which becomes an issue later on, and in our tshuva that we'll see later on in Jewish history, from 1968. As when brain death becomes an issue, when people are still hooked up to like a heart lung, a breathing machine, then they are breathing. You think they're breathing only by virtue of the machine, but you can't be completely sure. But while they're breathing, they would seem to be alive. But in this case, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is saying, if the Chatam Sofer holds that once breathing has stopped, that you can bury the people. That was the question that came up in the time of the Chatam Sofer. In the 17 and 1800s, there was this worry. I later saw an article that suggested that the worry was untrue, that the worry was unfounded. The worry was sometimes when you exhume people, they were finding like nail markings or some kinds of markings in the coffins that suggested to people that the person hadn't been dead yet, and they had this horrible fear that they had buried people alive, but then found themselves buried alive. You know, they came to and they found themselves buried alive. I think nowadays the scientists think that it's untrue, it's extremely rare, and that really what happens is that sometimes after death there's still involuntary emotions that have nothing to do with life. But whatever that story is, Chassam Sofer was asked about the question of when can you bury somebody? Maybe you have to wait till decomposition starts. So he said that as soon as breathing stops and you've checked it and you're pretty clear the breathing has stopped, you know, for 5 minutes, whatever it would be, then you can bury somebody. So Rav Moshe because in my mind, one is referred to commonly as Rav Shlomo Zalman, and so in my mind, they come up together. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I should just say Rav Auerbach, that would help, but Rav Auerbach says that if you can bury the person in a closed coffin in the ground, they're never coming out again, then why wouldn't you be allowed to take a body part from them to save somebody else, to save another Jew? That's what he thinks. In other words, I think people might have thought, well, isn't it a bizayon? Isn't it a mistreatment of the person who passed away? But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's point is that we're going to bury the person in the ground, and it's an obligation of pikuach nefesh. And for the obligation of pikuach nefesh, we push aside so many things. We push aside Shabbos, we push aside Yom Kippur, we push aside so many things that he says it doesn't make any sense to me. Why wouldn't it be true that you would take a body part to save a person? And he says, not only is it so clear to him that he can do that, like, let's remember he said he's not posking, this is just what he thinks, but it's for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach who's thinking this. He says he thinks you should be able to do it without paying attention to what the person who passed away thinks or to what the relatives think. And I think his claim is that for Pikuach Nefesh, once the person has passed away, it's just a body. So we can't mistreat the body for no good reason. We can't just do anything wrong with it. That's part of our obligation to treat the deceased with respect. But to give parts of the body to the person who could use it and maybe be saved, their life be saved for it, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says he sees no reason why there should be a right to refuse to do that. But all that, this is the other caveat that makes it more complicated, is only with somebody who's actually passed away, but with a gosis. So a gosis is somebody who's in the dying process. In the active dying process, we're not allowed to touch such a person unless we are pretty sure that it's going to be for their benefit. But where we think it might not be for their benefit, we're not allowed to touch them, and certainly not allowed to take body parts away, because we're not allowed to hasten their dying in any way. That's another part of the problem. So once they've passed away, Shlomo Zalman thinks taking parts of their body has to be okay, because it's pikuach nefesh. And he's going to relate it later on, we'll get to it, but he's going to relate it to the idea that we're allowed to take people's money even though they object. We have to pay them back later in the monetary case, but halachically, we rule that you can say a Jew can save himself or save somebody else even with somebody else's money, even though that person might be objecting. So here too, you can save them with the body parts of somebody who's passed away. It should be that you're allowed to do that. Someone suggested, though, that Chatam Sofer's focus on breathing seems to contradict a Ramah. That's what they had suggested. The Ramah is talking about a woman who sadly passes away in childbirth. And then the question is, can you open her up to basically perform a cesarean section after she's passed away to try to save the baby? And I think the Ramah says you can't, because he's worried about the fact that she might still be alive and then we might be harming her. And doesn't that, so how could that be? If the Chasam Sofer is so sure that cessation of breathing is what signifies death, then why shouldn't that be sure? So if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that no, the Chatam Sofer agrees, the breathing is the issue, except that, and here's the problem, Chatam Sofer is aware of the fact that in the course of dying, there are people who stop breathing for a while but aren't yet deceased, and then their breathing will come back, and it can be a significant amount of time. And therefore, the Chatam Sofer would certainly think that you'd have to wait until the breathing stopped for so much time that you can be positive that there's no more breathing going on. The word that he uses for it is an iluf. An iluf is like a fainting. But it means that the rhythm of breathing can slow down until the point that you got to be sure that the person couldn't be alive anymore, and then they breathe again. So all of that means you have to wait a significant enough amount of time that you can be sure that it's not an iluf, it's not a fainting, it's not a pause in the breathing, but because we have this other halacha that anything one does to hasten the death, even of a person who's actively dying, that's considered an halacha murder. So you have to be very careful about that. And if that's true, then you'd have to wait that long with this woman before you could cut her open, before you could do the cesarean. And by that time, certainly the baby has passed away, because the baby can't live beyond that point. So far, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has taken the position that we follow the Chatam Sofer, that breathing is the issue. Not only is breathing the issue, but if we're trying to establish death, we have to wait long enough that we can be sure that the breathing has ceased and is not just on a pause, and therefore that makes it difficult to save babies whose mothers pass away in childbirth. But after that point, once we're sure that the person has passed away, then using body parts of the person who has passed away is clear to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. That's an act of pikuach nefesh, an act of saving lives, and therefore he argues that it should be able to be done even without the consent of the deceased or the consent of the relatives of the deceased, because the halakha is that we're allowed to use such things for pikuach nefesh, for saving lives. And then he turns into somewhat of a modernist. He's going to go back and forth. There are going to be ways in this response to me, which Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is very open to modernity and the technological advancement of modernity and how they can be used in halakhic realms. We're about to see one. And then on other issues, he's going to say, I'm not convinced that that's something that we can use in halakha. So he says, in terms of the Chatam Sofer, who says that you have to wait and see that this breathing has ceased, and that's the only way you can determine death, he says he thinks there's been some change. Now, this is the response from 1968. He thinks there's been some change there in halacha. So, for example, a different topic completely, but the Gemara speaks about a ben chet, a baby born after 8 months, as a stone, is so clearly unable to live. The Gemara's understanding, and maybe that was how it worked back then, we'll never know. I don't know if we'll never know, but we don't know now. I think people today just assume that science and biology have always gone the exact same way, and therefore they'll just say the Gemara got it wrong. Maybe. Or things have changed, which is something that Tosfos often says, you know, Nishtanu HaTeva. Whatever it is clear in the Gemara. The Gemara thinks that the baby born after 7 months can live. There's a version of gestation and pregnancy in which a seven-month baby comes out fully formed enough that it can live. And then nine-month babies certainly live. But eight-month babies, the Gemara thought there was like a developmental process where they would get to a certain developmental stage and then take a big step back and throughout the 8th month and then redo it in the 9th month. And during that 8th month, the baby couldn't live. That was where the Gemara has it. So much so that the Gemara thought that the baby was so clearly going to die. The Gemara says you can't do anything on Shabbos to save such a baby. You can't violate Shabbos to save such a baby. There's all big issues about this issue. But the Rishon Zalman says, Rishon Zalman Orapa says, clearly that's changed in our times. Right? Why is that changed in our times? Because with medical advances, it's clearly no longer true that an 8-month-old baby can't be saved. How that worked in time of the Gemara, he doesn't bother to think about it. He points out, forget 8-month-old baby. He says, I've heard, and this is 1968, I think it's gotten much, much better, that a 5-month baby or a 6-month baby can be saved, even if they come out in the Gemara's time. This the Gemara gave as signs that the baby wasn't fully formed enough to be able to survive, that it hadn't yet developed fingernails or hair. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, but I know from doctors that you have babies that come out today with no fingernails, no hair, after 5 months, it's clearly been after 5 months, 6 months, and yet you put them in an incubator and some of them survive. So it has to be that in Chazal's time, they didn't know how to bring them back to life. So that's going to be an important phrasing of it, meaning he's not doubting Chazal's diagnosis. He's pointing out that Chazal didn't have the wherewithal to save such people. And that idea of being able to save somebody who's really dead will come up in a second again. But he throws in parentheses, in brackets, a very interesting question. He says, so based on that idea that a baby comes out 5 or 6 months, is really basically a dead baby, except that, not dead, but it's on its way to dying, except that we've now developed ways to save that life and to bring it to life. So Shlomo Zalman says, I don't know what to do then about a calf. Let's say you had a calf, right? A baby cow comes out too early, a preemie, and therefore it couldn't possibly live on its own. And the halacha, therefore, should be that it's a nafel. It's not really a live birth. But then you put it into an incubator and it lives. Right, so can you shecht it and eat it? Right, can you, once it comes out of the incubator, wait 8 days, because you'll say the incubator time was when it was really born, wait 8 days and shecht it, can you do such a thing? He says, I'm not sure, and I'm not, why is he not sure? I think he's not sure because he still thinks that the baby born prematurely is in some sense not alive. And while with people, the fact that it was in some sense not alive, but we can bring it back to life, that would be like if we found ways to resuscitate. You know, if you said to me, it used to be that once a person hadn't breathed for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, there's no way to bring them back without brain damage. Even there's no way to bring them back, 10 minutes, let's say. Then all of a sudden one day we find a way that in fact you can't do it, nobody would say can't do it, and we're gonna see Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is gonna basically say that he thinks the point of death is cessation of breathing, just that we might be able to save that life. So that's true for people. His question is, halachically, when we talk about an egel, a calf, or a nafel, a prematurely born one, which doesn't really have the ability to live, if we find it a way to get the ability to live, does that also make it an animal that's come to life now in terms of our being able to, halachically able to, use that as meat to eat? So that's an interesting speculation on his part. He doesn't get into it. He says, I'm not sure. He says, it's also true that when we talk about a horeg es hatrefa, so there's a halacha in the Gemara that if, God forbid, a Jew kills another Jew, and that second Jew is a perfectly ordinary, healthy Jew, and he does it with witnesses, et cetera, it's a capital crime. But being horeg et hatrefa, if a Jew kills another person, another Jew, who had some wound, or some, I think it probably be true of an illness as well, but some well-established wound that meant that that person was going to die anyway, just it was taking some while, so that is not a capital crime in halakha that a court could punish. It's not that it's okay, but a court wouldn't punish it because you didn't kill an ordinary living person, you killed a trefa. So in the definition of a trefa, right, so when it comes to animals, we have a list of trefot, we have a list of wounds that the Gemara recognized as the ones that kill animals. And there the Rambam said, it's a well-known Rambam, the Rambam said, for all that list doesn't really seem to work in our times. There are some of those on that list that we seem to be able to cure today, and there are others that aren't on the list that we think are mortal wounds. The Rambam says, when it comes to animals in kosher and what you're allowed to eat, so that's not a function of medical knowledge, it's a function of tradition. But when it comes to people, Rishlomo Narbach says it's clear when it comes to people. The Rambam says it in the second chapter of Hilchot Rotzeach Halacha Daled. It comes to what the doctors say. If the doctors say this wound in the time of the Gemara was a mortal wound, and therefore the murderer would have been, put in quotes, only murdering a trefa, and the only importance of that is that the court could have been death for that. But if you come to a point where the doctors say, no, that's not a trefa, we can heal that guy, we can keep him alive for 50 years from now, that would then convert the act of murder from being korigat atrefa, from killing a trefa, into killing a live person, and that would then return to being a capital crime. So Shlomo Zalman Aruch, so you see that the halacha of killing a trefa changes according to the time and according to the development of medicine. So therefore, he says, based on that insight, that certain things in halacha clearly changed based on the medicine of the time, and the medicine of the time affects our ability and our understanding of the halachic realities. So he says, I think that's true, that we'd have to use our best abilities to figure out whether somebody, to figure out the boundary between life and death. You can't just rely on breathing, because it's not completely unreliable, and in the time when that's all you had, then that was halachically valid, and that's what you lived on. But nowadays, that we have it. So this is going to be, eventually, will cause a chumra to a certain extent. But in terms of a kula, he points out, let's suppose a building falls down, and there are people trapped in the building, so you go on Shabbos to try to get them out, because it's pikuach nefesh. That's literally where the phrase pikuach nefesh comes from. You're mifakek, you check into the people who are under there to see where they're still living. So in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah of the Gemara, they said the way you checked in was, when you got there, you checked through the whole discussion, whether you checked only until you felt off for a heartbeat or a pulse, or you checked for breathing. But if we know halachically, you know, if we know medically today that there are people whose hearts might even have stopped, says Rishlomo Zalman Aruch, and who aren't currently breathing, but we know if we get them out, we can still resuscitate them, right? 2 minutes afterwards, 3 minutes after, we can shock their heart back. We might be able to shock their heart and give them mouth to mouth. Then you can violate Shabbos to get the building off of them and get them out. And you wouldn't just say, well, we go by breathing, a person stop breathing. So once we have a medical technology that allows us to save people even beyond what the Gemara knew about, Shlomo Zalman says, for sure that's true. And he says the same thing about burying people. If you had somebody who, in a hospital, stops breathing, and if you do nothing, they've stopped breathing. But we know how to get them back to breathing. So obviously, you don't just go off and bury them. You do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Do whatever you do. You do the things you can. So therefore, we get into this gray area, he says, where if medicine says you're able to bring somebody back to life, we treat it like an iluf, or a possible iluf, like a possible fainting rather than dead. But that doesn't contradict, he says, that doesn't contradict the breathing tradition in the Gemara. It's not the Gemara's wrong that breathing is the life. It's that we now have ways to restore breathing beyond where in the time of the Gemara you would have thought you couldn't. So breathing stops. You in the time of the Gemara, breathing stops. You have no way to bring them back. You say, okay, they're dead. That's what they are. Nowadays, breathing stops. We can say it might not have fully stopped. It might be that it's an iluf, a fainting, as it were, a pause, a long pause, maybe a long pause without human intervention will turn into a complete cessation, but we have ways to do it, and therefore, for as long as we have ways to do it, we're required to do it. But then he throws in, but if it turns out that the breathing stops and we never succeed at resuscitating them, then he thinks the moment of death was the moment when the breathing originally stopped. In other words, person's breathing stops nowadays. Breathing stops, their heartbeat stops. Okay, so if you think about, I'm thinking about TV shows, maybe you're smart enough not to have wasted time of your life on these TV shows, but I'm thinking TV shows, what immediately happens is you try to do CPR, you try to do mouth to mouth, you try to do all these kinds of things. You start doing all these kinds of things, you do it for 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, depending on how dedicated the doctors are, depending on what the soap opera issue is in that particular TV episode, and then they announce the time of death. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is saying, nope, that's a mistake. He doesn't say it quite like that because I don't think he watched TV shows. But the mistake is the time of death is when the heartbeat originally stopped, when the breathing originally stopped. We had thought that maybe it wasn't yet fully dead. It wasn't yet all dead. It was mostly dead. And with mostly dead, you can do things. And so we tried to do those things. When it turned out that those things did not succeed, then it turns out that the moment when it stopped was in fact dead. It was all dead. We just didn't know that it was all dead. I think that's a fascinating way of approaching it because it explains our ability to resuscitate people. Rosh Hashanah was saying, it's not that we bring dead people back to life. It's that when breathing stops, originally, there's two ways the breathing stops. They stop as an iluf, as a fainting, as a pause, and that pause can be so lengthy that if we left it alone, we would think they were dead, or maybe even they would convert it to dead at some point, but that's one way that it could happen, and those are the ways in which modern medicine is able to bring such people back to life, and then there's an obligation to, and then we're required to, but that's because the person isn't dead. But if it turns out that we fail, then that's because, Rosh Shlomo Zalman is saying, that's because they were dead originally. Because otherwise, he says, there's the Ramah halacha that we mentioned before would be a problem for us. Because the halacha of the Ramah that we mentioned before was that you don't do a cesarean after she's passed away to try to save the baby. Why not? So Rosh Shlomo Zalman, because Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, if we think that the time of death is only once we're positive the breathing is not coming back, then it could be she just then passed away, and then maybe the baby's still alive, and then maybe why would we open her up to check and try to save the baby? So Shlomo Zalman says, no, he thinks what happens is she stops breathing. We have to wait for a while. Back then, you had to wait for a while because you were worried it was iluf, and by the time you were convinced it wasn't iluf, that's the point. It's not that we're not sure she's still maybe in the process of dying, and when we're finally sure she's not going to breathe again, that's when we know she's died. It's we have reason to think she might have died right now. By the time we're confident of it, we can't do the cesarean anymore. So that would be, in our days, that might change, therefore, because we could, as soon as we think there's an iluf, do various things, whatever it is. But that's the point that he makes. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is saying the time of death is always cessation of breathing, but when breathing stops, you're not always sure whether it stopped, as in dead, or it stopped as in an iluf, as a fainting, as a pause, and that leaves room for life-saving measures. Then he adds that that for medical treatments, I think that's something that not all people today have the courage to say, for medical treatments that are experimental, he thinks that it's not true that you're required. I think we saw the Sicilians who argued the other way, but he thinks you're not required, the patient is not required to accept the medical treatment, to take it on, because it's as long as it's an operation or whatever it is, it's a serious treatment and it's an experimental one, he's not required to do it. And now, 22 minutes in, for those of you who are counting, and I am, comes another tshuva in the list of this, in this chapter, and this one is from the 4th of Cheshvan, which is why it came today, from Tuf Shin Nun Gimel, 4th of Cheshvan of 1992, so this is almost 25 years later, and this is about brain death already. The person writing him, I don't know the tone, he responds very politely, but it's not a little chutzpahdik, because he says, you know, I know, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, I know that saving lives is an important issue. It sounds like the guy said, I think you're being so makil on pikuach nefesh, you should be machmir, you should be so stringent about it. Meaning, I think the person writing him wanted to say brain death counts as death, which makes it much easier to transplant organs, because one of the problems with saying Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the earlier comments, it said, yes, you should transplant organs even if the deceased doesn't want it, but those are only going to be those organs that survive beyond death for long enough, because Shlomo Zalman said you can't take them out until the person's all dead, until you're confident they're dead. So this person wants to rely, it seems like, on brain death, and say that once the person is brain dead, as the medical community says, we should be able to transplant organs. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, it's not that I'm not aware of the importance of saving lives, it's that I'm also aware of the seriousness of murder. It said very politely, and maybe it was just all very polite, but it feels a little sharp. And his point that he makes is, and therefore when you're discussing this, you have to do it with a lot of awe and trepidation, because we're talking about whether to kill a person and whether it counts as killing a person. So the person who had written him had pointed out that if somebody, there's a mission in Sanhedrin that says that if one person strikes another Jew, however they strike them, and the person gets ill, and they rally a little bit, and then they pass away, the murderer is considered a murderer, even though there's a rally in between. You could have said, well, once he rallied in between, that's a sign that it wasn't the original striking that killed him, and that's not the way you posken. So that says, this writer had seemed to have said, that would seem to say that the original aiming towards death was in fact death. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, you're right, and that's a good point, but we didn't put the murderer to death right at the beginning when we thought it was a blow that could kill the person. We waited to see if it actually killed the person. So too, once a person is a ghost case, is actively dying, meaning this person, I think it said, so that shows you that once they're in the process of dying, they're in the process of dying. So the person is brain dead. You are still Muslim and are about want to treat him as a ghost case, a person in the act of dying, in the process of dying. I want to say, well, they're already dead because they're already in that process. But you see from that same Mishnah that you didn't put the murderer to death before the guy actually died. You only put him to death once. So it's true. Once he dies, it turns out that it was a whole process of dying in here too. Once the ghost case is dead, once the ghost case passes away, we'll know that that kesisa led to his death. But that's we can rely on it. And he says we can't rely on, he's going to say it a couple of times, you can't rely on the medical community's decision about how you define death, even if it's going to help us save somebody else's life, because killing a ghost case is also murder in halacha, and he's worried that the medical community is defining gesisa, somebody who is a ghost case, in the process of dying, as dead. And now he gets to brain death. He says, we don't have any tradition about brain death. And then he says, and I think this is a crucial thing for him, he just throws it in, but I think it was a really important factor for him. It's not something that we can see. And therefore, he doesn't think we can use it to establish definitive death. And the fact that the doctor says, I'm positive of it, he says, I don't understand how you can count that. First of all, the whole idea of somebody saying, well, I'm sure of it, is for a personal matter. Meaning, if the doctor says, I'm so sure of it that I'm going to act this way for myself, that might be an argument. But to do it in terms of somebody else, the patient, and to do it so much that we might be killing the person, Shlomo Zalman says, we don't rely on a bar, really, on a doctor's confidence about that. So those issues, I think, are what's playing for emotion for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He says, I'm convinced that the doctors are seeing something that's going on, and the person is well on his way to dying, but the fact that he's already dead, based on this, he says, there's no way to see it and to know it and to judge it in that way. Another halacha this man brought up was that there are cases when the needs of people conflict with each other. So in halacha, when the needs of two perfectly living people conflict with each other, there's no real way that we can choose one over the other. We're not allowed to choose people over other people, right? Meaning, if one person has food, the other person doesn't, he's allowed to eat his own food. But if it's really a matter of pushing somebody aside in some active way for the benefit of the other person, we generally don't do that. But we do allow that when one of the people is closer to, demonstrably closer to death than the other. So a treifa will be nidche before a chai. A permanent with a mortal wound will triage them in that case and take care of their needs less and focus on the needs of the person who, as far as we know, is perfectly healthy and able to live a full lifespan. So wouldn't that say here too, you have a ghost case and the needs of the ghost case conflict with the needs of the other person? Why don't we say that we prefer the needs of the person? Someone says that's only when they're already connected to each other in some way. Meaning, you know, they're in a desert and there's only food for enough, or that if one person doesn't get it's to be that they're fully linked to each other, but there's no linking here of these people. So you want to, nobody would have said, for example, that you can kill a treifa to save another Jew, a Jew's life. Nobody would say that, right? So there is a case, I have to skip it, I've gone too close to my time already. There's a case where Ula does seem to hasten somebody's death, depending on you read a Gemara in the Darim, but that was because the person was already definitely dead and he was saving himself. It's a complicated story there. But nobody thinks you could just up and kill a treifa or a gosase actively on your own in order to save your life. And so therefore, that whole line of thought doesn't do it. So that's the issues with the brain that he brings up in this tshuva from the fourth of Cheshvan of Tuf Shin Nun Gimel. I will point out that the last little bit he says, and by the way, it's not only that we're not allowed to do it, the patient himself isn't allowed to do it, right? What if people give consent? If brain death ever happens, in Rosh Hashanah Orbach's reading, if brain death ever happens, you can transplant my organs. So Rosh Hashanah says that's not your right to say such a thing. In the same way as we started off him saying, it's not the person's right to say, after my death, I don't want you taking my organs, because that's pikuach nefesh, and the person's already passed away, and then it's just material that's out there in the world, and we should be allowed to use it. Here he says, you're not the owner of your life, such you can say, kill me. It all stems from that. He's not convinced that brain death is death, because the doctors say, we see what's going on inside. What's going on inside is this and this and this. So it says, I don't think we have any tradition that should fit, and that helps us understand these issues, and that helps us rule definitively the person has passed away, and consent, therefore, is not the issue. A little while later that year, on the 17th of Adar of Tav Shin Nun Gimel, he addresses transplants again. He says he thinks that outside of Israel, where the majority of doctors and patients are non-Jews, and they follow the rules of brain death, and they accept brain death as a definitive criterion of death, I think a Jew can sign up to be on the transplant list and to accept transplants. To me, that's an interesting question, just in terms of Darkei Shalom, in terms of Eva. If they know that we would never allow ourselves to have our own organs transplanted, but we would take transplants, it seems to me that that fits other categories, and I would have had a question about that, but not for now. But then he throws in, but in Israel, and then he says, Shechayavim li'tnaheg gam lefi din Torah HaKdosha, well, we're obligated to follow the Torah. He doesn't clarify it. I think he means that since most of the population is Jews, and most of the patients, most of the doctors are Jews, and therefore Jews are obligated in the Torah. Whether or not they're observant Jews, they're obligated in the Torah, and therefore observant Jews can't be part of a system if it's violating the Torah when they're sort of, in that sense, helping other Jews violate the Torah. So therefore, in that situation, he thinks that if a person who's ill is being artificially kept alive, he's on a heart-lung machine, let's say, or he's on a respirator, even if, as far as we can tell, there's brain death there, or Shlomo Neubach thinks he's still a Suffolk Goseis, and therefore you can't do any transplantation or anything like that with it. But he does say that he thinks you're allowed to remove him from the respirator, which not everybody says. The reason why he says that is because there's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, and how the Shulchan Aruch thought you would distinguish these things, I think it's in the Ramah actually, how the Shulchan Aruch thought you would distinguish these things is not clear, but if we think that we're just preventing somebody from passing away, a person is actively dying, there's one thing is that we do is we're keeping them alive. We're helping them continue to live. There are other acts that even already in the time of Shulchan Aruch, they recognize as being not acts that are keeping a person alive, but acts that are just preventing death. So acts that are just preventing death, we're not required to continue doing. Therefore, Shlomo Zalman Neubach says that if there's brain death here and the person hasn't moved in a long time and there's a respirator, you want to remove them from the respirator, he thinks you're allowed to remove the respirator. Then he has a whole discussion of Moshe Feinstein's position on this issue, and he goes, Moshe, and that's an interesting question of its own, but it's not for now. So let me just make one last point that he makes at the very end. He thinks that beyond the time that the breathing stopped, he thinks you'd have to wait another half a minute to be sure the person has passed away, and then you'd be able to treat them as dead because they're dead. But then he's heard from doctors that that's not even necessarily true. That might not be long enough to figure it out because there are people who've got brain activity even beyond that time, and therefore he thinks you might have to wait longer. And then he points out that people have pointed out to him that it could be, and this is part of the argument for the brain death people, it could be that in fact brain death is death, some people say. He's not saying that that's okay, but he says, because he had said, but if they're still breathing, they're still breathing. But then people were pointing out to him, and he doesn't conclude on this. He's surprised by it, but he's not willing to change his opinion yet. That people can say that even if the mother's dead, we can turn her into a sort of incubator. If we keep her alive just by artificially having the breath continue going and circulation to continue going, then her body can function as an incubator, and the baby can keep alive and then be born. That would seem to apply that maybe Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has to rethink this whole question of, well, if there's breathing going on, even if it's done by a machine, that must mean there's still life there. It caused him to question it a little bit, and part of what caused him to question it a little bit was they did an experiment that they took sheep, apparently, and they cut off the sheep's head, but the pregnant sheep's head, but they continued the circulation. They got the blood to continue circulating, and after 3.5 hours, the baby, the sheep, the kid, the baby sheep, the lamb or the kid was born. So cutting off a head is clearly killing it. It's death. Someone says, well, maybe that's different. Maybe it's that you killed it rather than it died naturally. But fundamentally, it's a big question, a big challenge to his position. His position was, as long as there's breathing and circulation, then there must be life going on there. And now you can prove that, no, I can create breathing circulation, which doesn't have life to it. And I thought that was impossible. Nonetheless, he sticks his position. So it's a complicated question. We're not going to rule on it today. We're not going to prove it today in either way. But these are some of the thoughts that Shlomo Zalman Neubach had over a 25-year period about transplantation and defining time of death and the role of breathing in defining life and the role of circulation and the brain function in life and all those kinds of issues in terms of how we absorb and use modern technology to save people. And the modern technology, medical technology, to understand better the nature of life and when life ends and what that means for us halakhically. For the 4th of Cheshvan, a responsive firm for Shlomo Zalman Neubach, have a great day.